You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
My name is Uri Lifshitz. Hello!
Ah, Uri, how you just took the spotlight away. This episode will be on the spotlight. I will describe what it is, we'll try to have some sort of working definition, and then we'll go through all sorts of ways in which the players, the GMs, and even the system can control where it is pointed to and what do you actually do with it. But first, you should know that this episode came to be thanks to a thread that Uri opened on our Facebook group, in which he asked, what should we discuss? And we got like a dozen answers. Today we're focusing on one of them by Tal Shiboli. Thank you, Tal, for this suggestion. We will definitely get to all of your other suggestions in later episodes. And I do remind you, if you too have a suggestion, you can go to our Facebook group or send us an email, show@dwarfcast.net. But now, let's move the spotlight to Uri. Uri, what is a spotlight?
Well, it's a tough one. The definition of the spotlight is one of those things that seems obvious until you really think about it. But for the purpose of this episode, when we say the spotlight, we mean that person around the table who is currently describing what is happening in the game. This person could be the GM, it could be one of the players. However, that specific person who's currently engaging in the act of describing what's happening in the game, that person has the spotlight. Of course, the spotlight can be transferred from one player to another, from one player to the GM, and from the GM to other players. And it is usually the prerogative of the GM to pass the spotlight from one person to the other, or to take it back to themselves. It's very easy to confuse the spotlight with the GM attention or acknowledgement, but they are not the same thing. We won't discuss why that is. Of course, NPCs played by the GM might also take time in the spotlight. Some of the potential problems that we have in role-playing games have to do with the spotlight. And specifically, it is when one player or the GM hog the spotlight and doesn't let the other participant of the game to actually take part in playing the game. Hogging the spotlight is a really big issue, both in role-playing games, in stage productions, and pretty much in any activity that is performed by a group of people. And that is because almost everyone loves to be in the spotlight.
Not everyone. There are passive players. Some passive players, that which we discussed on episode 22, seem to avoid the spotlight completely. But again, we've already discussed them and we talked about how maybe to lend them some spotlight or encourage them to get even a bit into some spotlight. Go to 22 and listen to that.
There will be a link in the show notes. But since most of us love to be in the spotlight, it's usually a problem sharing it. And let me remind you that sharing the spotlight is not the same as empowering fellow players, which we have discussed in episode 83. In this episode, we want to talk about the concept of the spotlight and show you several ways that could be used to deal with those issues, both as a GM or as a player. Let's start by discussing how we, as players, can share the spotlight amongst ourselves.
I want to start with an issue, or at least a potential issue, because it's one of the things that we might not even realize is happening. And I'm not talking about the person who is the classic spotlight hogger, the one that is just talking all the time, and whenever someone says something, they will immediately say something else, and thereby, essentially, taking the spotlight to themselves. Now, I'm talking about totally normal, regular people. On episode 16, we talked about running an inclusive game, and we mentioned something interesting. Generally speaking, we said that everyone around the table should aim to distribute the spotlights equally and should always in their mind think about it and think about, wait, maybe I've talked too much, or maybe that person didn't talk enough. Men in general tend to take the spotlight. It's just a cultural thing. While marginalized groups tend to allow this to happen, not wanting to stir the pot, not wanting to draw any attention, not wanting to make a fuss. Either as a GM or as a player, you can help less dominant players get a spotlight by simply being aware of it currently being pointed at you and relinquishing it, giving it to someone else. Sometimes, however, we really, really have something you want to say. Sometimes the spotlight is on someone else, but as a player, I think I would love to have a say in this, to express my character. It's part of my fun. You can do so with the tiniest little intrusion. We call it interjecting some flavor. And it's when you just express in a tiny little bit of way how your character reacts to something that is happening. Something very small that others can choose to grab onto in advance and thereby allow you to get the spotlight or completely ignore. And then maybe they just noted it in the rear of their mind and you got to say it and everyone is pleased and we can continue. For example, I will now have the spotlight and Uri, you will interject. I'm going forward toward the king and I'm looking at him and I'm going to start with this whole thing. Just let me want to think about what exactly I'm going to say.
Well, as you approach the king, you can see a look of disgust and horror spread over Bastard's face as you continue to move toward the king.
This is an example of how Uri did not just say what Bester is doing and how Bester is now the source of all attention and joy and entertainment in this scene. He just said what was happening to the side. As we imagined it, we can even see Bester to the side of the screen because Uri mentioned, as you continue to, he relinquished very voluntarily the spotlight. We talked about this on an episode that was all about ourselves, Make Your Character Come Alive, episode 28, and we suggested it there as a way for you to make your character come alive when it's someone else's turn to talk.
Of course, you can do this the other way around. During your turn, you can create an opportunity for other characters to join in on a specific scene. In my eyes, this is one of the best ways to share the spotlight, to invite other players to interject their character into your turn. For example, if I am trying to convince this poor prince to not marry the demon-possessed princess of Chelyax, I could say, well, don't marry her, this would be silly. Or I can say, oh, dear prince, you don't want to get married. You know who's married? Haskell, our dwarf. He's been married for years and he's miserable. Aren't you, Haskell? Why don't you tell this lovely NPC here how miserable you are? And I have just invited the player who's playing Haskell to do a monologue, to go in and present his character and interject his character into the scene.
We will now continue on to the GM control, because what you may be starting to think is, isn't that what the GM usually does? Like, you talk, yes, sure, and then he turns over to the player playing Husker and say, do you have something to add? Or something like that.
That's your GM voice.
as a general rule, the GM usually has a lot of influence of where the spot is currently being pointed. We all look at her, and with our eyes, we're asking her where to look, what to do, who is now talking. We sort of expect her to point the spotlight for us by default. And that's a lot of power. That gives her a lot of power. When she directs the spotlight, she can choose who is, well, you know, in the spotlight. But by there, she also, in a way, chooses who is not in the spotlight. So managing it and making sure that everyone gets, I don't know if equal airtime, but enough airtime to make them satisfied. Like, for example, the shy player might not want to have a lot of spotlight.
Airtime would air quotes. Obviously.
Airtime with air quotes, yes. They're not literally currently broadcasting anything. The shy player might not want to have a lot of spotlight, but they probably want some. They probably want a little bit. They probably want to feel awesome. Maybe if they're not sure how. As the GM, I won't say it's your responsibility to do so, because as we've just shown, players can do so as well. You can point yourself the spotlight at other players. But you have so much power as the GM that it's really something that personally I expect you to do. I think that because you have this power, one would say it comes with a great responsibility.
Oh no, you didn't.
I would not say that it is morally on you to do so, but I would say that you should definitely use the power wisely. We talked about Slaps and Bennies, for example, in episode 27, and I want to bring something important from that episode, because not giving spotlight is an amazing slap. It's something that the GM can use to make a player change their behavior. If I am always jumping forward and saying, yes, and I want to do this and this, and when he does this and this, I want to do this and this, the GM can intentionally avoid addressing what this player is doing, telling them not now, or even something like just a minute, or even completely ignoring them, moving somewhere else and making it clear that they don't really care about what this person is saying. They are not currently receiving the spotlight. And then after a few seconds, returning to them and asking them what is going on, etc., what they want to do, and giving them some spotlight eventually. Very measured control of who you care about, who gets your attention. In City of Mist, the spotlight is an element of the system. It is defined in one of the pages of the book, and it is used throughout the book in various places. But this does not mean that the spotlight is something that you roll for. Instead, while the system defines it, it then simply says the MC chooses what to do with it and gives some prompts on how to use it, how to control it, to be aware of its existence. And it's pretty cool because it gives you several things. Like, for example, it says the following. Managing the spotlight is comparable to a director switching between cameras to ensure all the lead characters receive enough airtime in the story. And that's a great way for the book to explain to the MC what their role is, what are they supposed to do with their power, something that might not be mentioned in other books. And I should really say now that I'm the editor for City of Mist, so me adoring this text is maybe not surprising. But the most important thing actually here, I think, is the MC intrusion, which is an interesting concept. Generally speaking, in City of Mist, when the MC wants to do something, the MC is their name for the GM, when the MC wants to do something, they have to wait until the players fail to do something, or roll for something and get a specific result. They can't just do stuff. They have moves, and to activate moves, the players first need to activate moves, etc., etc.
Like all Powered by the Apocalypse game.
Exactly, exactly. Unlike most Powered by the Apocalypse games, because it also described the spotlight specifically, something that not all Powered games do, it also has something called MC intrusion. It's the third type of thing that an MC can do after soft moves and hard moves. MC intrusion, just like their name is, allow the MC to intrude during someone else's spotlight. And they can do so in order to do very minor things that influence the game. Like, for example, saying there's a story tag for that. Or, for example, saying you're activating an player move, you need to roll for this. Or stuff like that. So this is a way for the book to say, technically speaking, the MC, you are not taking the spotlight. You are making things clear that the player can do something, or that the rules should be interpreted in a certain way, or that something is now revealed that wasn't clear before, or you ask for more details because you want to make sure that maybe something needs to be activated, some move, etc. But you're only doing so for a moment, and then it goes directly back to where it was.
This is actually the GM working under a different hat at the moment. He's not acting as the person describing the world or acting as NPCs, but this is the MC working as either a representative of the system, the rules, making sure that things are progressing as the rules dictate they should, namely by activating moves, or as the person in charge of everyone understanding what's happening, thus able to ask clarification questions even in the middle of someone else's turn.
Exactly.
I'm sure all of you have noticed that the spotlight is very closely linked with the pacing and the atmosphere of the gaming session. Much like editing in a movie can really set the tone or affect how you, the viewer, feel when you're watching it. If you do quick jump cuts, meaning you switch between cameras very quickly, you get a sense of disorientation that is usually associated with high drama and high action sequences. While if you create slow transitions of the spotlight, you give more time for every player to express themselves, but you also give every player more time to consider what just happened. This would usually create a more slow, dramatic atmosphere in which everyone are very, very aware of anything that happens. And this is another very powerful tool in which the transition of the spotlight can be used by the GM or indeed by players to influence the game. Consider these two spotlight transition. Player A saying, "I draw my sword," and then player B answering, "Well, in that case, I shall draw my sword and stand next to you," versus player A, "I draw my sword," player B, "No, no, I draw my sword as well." The quickness, the shift, the transition has an effect on its own beside what the action is.
And also I would suggest something like, "I draw my sword," and then the GM says, "You unsheath it slowly and methodically and it glints over the sun." And then the GM turns to player B and says, "What do you do?" And he says, "I draw my sword." And that's a very different
transition.
Yes, something else is happening here than what just happened before.
And the comparison to a movie is so obvious. You see the main character draw its sword. Now, either there's a really slow-mo zoom on the act of drawing the sword, or a close-up to the face of the character as he draws the sword, or you can have a quick cut to the second character also drawing a sword. Both of these create totally different feel to them. Both of these shots make a very different impact on us as viewers when we watch the movie.
Let's continue to the third point, which is mechanical control, because sometimes the mechanics have the control. The mechanics decide who gets the spotlights. In most gaming systems, there isn't a mechanic that determines who gets the spotlights, except for...
With one notable exception!
Yes.
The initiative!
Exactly.
Yes, most of us think of initiative as, okay, who's the next in combat? Because the order of the turn is important. But if you think about it, what an initiative order is a way to make sure everyone gets their turn in a specific order. Everyone gets their turn, everybody gets a moment in the spotlight.
Yes, which is one of the reasons why initiative is sometimes used in systems that are not D&D to do other things. Like in Mistborn or in Fate, initiative is used for all sorts of dramatic scenes. It doesn't really matter what is happening in the scene, if it's combat or if it's some sort of social engagement that is very high stakes. If we want to make sure that everyone has a say and everyone has equal opportunity to influence what is going on, initiative is great. But there are systems that go even a step further. And the whole point, in some ways, is to make sure that some people get some spotlight at some specific times. There are some story games, of course, that do so. Most story games are all about controlling who gets to say what when, because in many of them, there are no GMs to control it. But there are some systems that are somewhere in the middle, like Primetime Adventures.
In Primetime Adventure, you can have a whole session dedicated to your character. And that is determined by the mechanic. You have something called fan mail, and if your character get enough fan mail, they get their own episode, so to speak. There's a session dedicated to your character. Everyone are aware that this session is about the glorious bard, Bester Everskill from the Magnimar Everskill, and you have the right to hog the attention. This is a session about your character, and everyone else should do only things that support that.
Yes, and there are rules for that. And one of the reasons it's fine is because the system is built in a way that makes sure that in a future session, you will get your spotlight. So that's fine, so it's fair, and therefore I will allow it. I will allow it this session. I will take a step back and I will allow you, Uri, to have your Bester moment.
Woohoo! Not that Bester Everskill of the Magnimar Everskill needs anyone's permission to have his moment in the spotlight.
Of course not.
Oh, God, bards are terrible. I love playing them. They're so terrible.
And that's about spotlights, I do believe. Do we have anything to say for a summary?
Yes. We should say that distributing the spotlight evenly among those who want it is one of the most important aspects of tabletop role-playing games, in my opinion. And I think the burden of sharing it around the table is not something that should be placed on the shoulders of the GM alone. I think it's something that we as players have to strive for. We should aim to that point where if someone wants to participate in a scene, we will find a way to let them have their moment in the spotlight.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.
This is the part of the show in which we talk about role-playing games in our own personal lives. Uri, have you been role-playing games in your own personal life?
I have. This past week, I have role-played 3 gaming sessions, and it was awesome. I love playing role-playing games, as some of you may have gathered. I have played 3 sessions this week. I did a test play for the short standard Tuscal Adventure, which I'm currently writing, and it went very well. But we have talked about this in last week's episode. This is an unusual week because we have recorded both episodes on the same week because last week was terrible. I ran a game of Masks: A New Generation, and the system is really growing on me. Most of the session was simply a few guys baking cookies for a charity auction, basically. And it worked. There was a fight, but it wasn't the main focus of the session. Most of the focus of the session was baking the cookies, gossiping about the other cool kids in school. And of course, when some innocent bystanders were hurt during the short fight, and one of the characters really had a really guilt-ridden moment because she wasn't strong enough to protect the kids who were there, the innocent bystander kid. Of course, they had to be kids because the GM is evil. And yesterday I had a Pathfinder First Edition, my usual Pathfinder campaign, and we had a rolling combat encounter. For those of you who are not familiar with the term, a rolling combat encounter, I mean, you go into a combat, but it spills over to the next combat. The same battle continued to roll onward and onward without any time for a short rest in between. And we had one of those rolling battles for a long time. And it's been a long while because our characters are, you know, pretty high level by now, like level 14. And it's nice come to an encounter where you really feel you have to use every single advantage your character have and every single ability and every single item that you have in order to just survive.
Mm.
And getting that sense of fear and challenge in high-level D&D or Pathfinder is a tricky thing to get.
Very true. In my game this week, we've returned to Hell's Rebels, which is my Pathfinder 2 game in my local gaming club, RP Haven, in which we play the Hell's Rebels adventure path. And we've just started Adventure 2. And I won't spoil too much, but there's this strange alien creature at the beginning of Adventure 2, and they faced her. And they were sure that it was a sort of fight like what you've just described, that is going to be a very stressful and resource-consuming fight, and that it's going to be very dangerous. But despite me even adding an evil combatant on her side, they fought her quite well and defeated her in like 3 rounds, I think. There are 2 reasons for it. First, I made her a bit less powerful than she was supposed to be because we're running out of time mostly, but also because of the conversion between Pathfinder 1 and 2 is still more art than science. And second of all, I think they just roll very well, and that's completely fair. And I don't think I did anything wrong. I mean, yeah, sure, she was a bit weaker than she was, I'm doing air quotes, supposed to be, but we are running out of time. We really needed to end this about 30 minutes. And more importantly, they had lots of fun. They enjoyed themselves beating her up and winning quite well with very few hit point losses even. And that's super fine. They compared her to an enemy they had a few levels back that was the worst because he had the same AC as her, but then they were level 1 and now they are level 4. And the difference is they can feel it very, very obviously with every roll of the die. They are more powerful and they like it, and good for them. This is it.
Lehitron!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by Attribution Non-Commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Duo. And you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the shoulders of dwarves.
This is it. If you have anything you want to tell us about, you want to ask us about, you want to say us about, do so at show@dwarfcast.net. But if you don't, then you can also just recommend us. You can just tell your friend, for example, that, hey, there's a podcast you might like. They talked about a topic. fill in the topic that you're actually talking about. Don't say topic. That sounds as if you're
Iran,
not.
That is like the worst recommendation that you can give for our podcast. It's like terrible.
They talk about game. They say game. and also, please give us reviews. It's so powerful. You have no idea. When you post a review somewhere, let's say iTunes, obviously, but other places as well, it makes something happen in the algorithm behind the scenes, and we get more listeners. That's just how it works. It's weird.
You can also support us on Patreon if you want. Just go to Google and write down On the Shoulders of Dwarves Patreon, and you can give us $1 or $2 or more every month so we can continue doing this podcast for you. Because we love role-playing games, we're going to record this podcast whether you support us on Patreon or not. But if you will support us on Patreon, we could probably do a lot more than just record this podcast. So, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
This world is carried on the shoulders of dwarves.